think the chairperson, the acting chairperson, will be with us in a minute. But I think we can start the questions and answers session, which I don't think is going to take a long time. I'll just directly ask for questions. You are recognized. Any other one? You are number two. You want to ask a question? I'm not sure whether you are allowed. I think only members of parliament can ask questions in a meeting like this one. Only members of parliament, even the members of the department, can ask questions. Three, four. Any other hand? Five. In that order. Thank you. Should I ask why? Okay. If he's comfortable with that, I won't take a decision for you. Are you fine with that? Okay. You had the caucus before. Okay. Let's start with the first question from your side. You are the first.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. From the Federation, we've been told there are a number of students who are dependents on the military veterans who have been enrolling in the universities or colleges or TVET colleges studying. Maybe if one could be enlightened on what faculties these students have been enrolled in. My second question would be if one could maybe establish from the presentation, since we have the military veterans, can maybe the government give the entirety of the number of these military veterans that are under the department for financial assistance and otherwise? Can we get the figures if possible? My third question would be around the expenditure. In your own words, you mentioned that there was a variant of 7.020 million rand, which was meant for certain for certain allocations, but unfortunately it could not be spent there, and there was a variance on that amount. If maybe, can we get an explanation on those funds that were shifted? What purposes have they been utilized for after they were shifted from the original purpose? Following question would be as well on the understanding of these budget allocations that have at times been shifted from their directed allocations. There is another of the same as the 7.020 million. That of 4.2 million, which was not spent according to what was meant for, was shifted, if I could call it. Currently, why has it been allocated to, looking at the importance or the need for the sub-program of empowering and scaling skill development of the military veterans in order for them not to always rely on the department for sort of assistance that they might be looking forward to. What will be your take on those? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. It's not for me to add on your question, but your first question on the students. By the students in tertiary, are you referring to the dependents of the military veterans or those? Okay.
Yes, I'm referring to dependents.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is not a question, but just a short comment to say. Clearly, you have serious challenges in the department. The lack of leadership, the systems are not in place or they are weak. There's lack of proper control, you know, and I think you cannot continue with this acting. At some point, a decision has to be taken and post must be filled. We need to have permanent members who will be able to lead the department, and probably can be able to see some change because this makes the department to be unstable. There's plain stability, and we will not be able to achieve anything. The status quo will just remain the same, year in, year out, will remain the same. You are even unable to implement the skills development. I think you mentioned something about skills development that you are unable to meet the target for. And that speaks to empowering and capacitating your members for them to be able to perform their duties effectively and be able to, you know, to be able to meet the targets that you set for yourself. That's the comment that I wanted to make, to say, I think the only thing that I saw on the PPI that was achieved properly was burials, if I'm not mistaken. And anything else, you know, it's not achieved, and really, decisions need to be taken. We need to also look at it as a committee and see how we can assist them, especially with the filling of posts. You can't have an acting for a year, an extension of 6 months, another one comes in, you come in, new ideas are coming in, you start afresh all the time. It's not stable. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In that order, number three.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, there was a concern raised by the Office of the Auditor General. The AG was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence that disciplinary steps were taken against the officials who had incurred irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure as required by the PFMA. Why there are delay to implement consequences management? It's because the perception is created outside that it may happen that the management is afraid to implement the consequent management, thinking something else may come out from those people who are exercising, which we interpret as corruption if they do not follow the processes. The quarter report, the Department of Military Veterans briefed the committee that housing and database of the military veterans are two of the biggest challenges. So I would like to know what progress has been made to address those challenges. Well, it is also reported that only 45% of the military veterans have been captured and verified on a database by end of March 2019. And the department has undertaken to finalize the database by end of December. Can you please give us an update on that? The third one, targets that were set has not been met in consecutive years regarding the housing for beneficiaries. Since only 417 houses that were built out of 1,000, one would like to know the funds that were allocated, or the balance of the funds that were allocated for 1,000 houses, but only 417 were done. So what is going to happen with the allocated funds for the balance of that? Were they being shifted? If shifted, where they were shifted to? It is also noted that there are three staff members that were put on suspension. I would appreciate if one can be updated. What is the status of those three staff that were suspended? Are there any financial implications in regard? Again, when can we see all provinces having their own offices so that military veterans do not suffer the consequences of not having offices closer to them? Chairperson, though it is not reported here, but if one goes out, there are numerous complaints, members of the military veterans. Like an example, one qualifies to have a battery for his child, but from February he has been corresponding with the department till now. There is no response and the child is going in and out at school, not getting assistance. Now, if you look at that, one is expecting that if a request or a complaint is lodged to the department, because it's about the child to be development and he's got the right to go to school. Now, I don't know how many, because I'm talking about someone I've come across and explained to me that they do not get, the benefits on time. When are you going to look at that to ensure that, if there are complaints or correspondence that come to the department are responded to as soon, as possible? Thank you.
Thank you. In that order, I think you are now chairing. I thought I was the deputy chair.
Apologies, Chair. General, thank you very much. Sometimes the devil is in the detail, eh? And I've just gone into some of the programs and I've just analyzed and see what is going on in the different programs. Now, if you look at the first program, it seems like there's just, there's been an extra bit of money appropriated or environmented, and, spending is not too bad. But when you go and analyze that, then it comes up with some questions. Why did corporate services increase so dramatically? From an initial 54 million to 72 million, that's quite a drastic increase. So what was the reasons for that, and especially where it has been taken away from, seems like it's been taken away from program empowerment and stakeholder management. So that might have a huge effect within administration as well. And this is a reoccurring expense, and that's office accommodation. It's quite a huge shifting of funds from that. what is the situation with office accommodation? Is it still something that you require? Is it something that you have leased but not occupied? Is it something that doesn't really exist and that it's a really unnecessary budget item? Because you can't afford to budget and then not utilize it, and it is not well thought through. If you look at the program 2, social economic support, and some of the problems that has been raised comes from this. Sadly, we see that database and benefit management, about nearly 7 million rand was taken away. Now, in my opinion, database and the benefits management is crucial. Without the database, you don't know who the military veterans are, and you don't know who qualify for benefits. And by not capturing them, putting on the database, you've got maybe thousands of military veterans that is in dire need of support and assistance that cannot get it. If you look at that socio-economic support program, now if I'm correct, the socio-economic program, that is where your housing and bursaries come from. And we've just had a couple of questions with regards to housing and bursaries. 37 million rand has been taken away there. Now if you're taking money away, obviously you cannot deliver. And I mean, together with that, you've indicated in your presentation there's certain provinces that is not really delivered on housing, but there were certainly provinces that was not mentioned that, and I assume that those who were not mentioned did deliver on housing. Now, if it's a situation that some provinces cannot deliver for whatever reason, you have to look at that, and then we have to give it to the provinces who can deliver, because eventually who's suffering by not delivering? Only military veterans. Only military veterans. So those things are very important, and without that, I mean, you can do whatever you want to, and you will never get to a point where you can really satisfy the needs of military veterans. I will stick to that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. In that order.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. General Mwebe, in my language, to your name will be Mwebe. Mwebe.
Let me also join colleagues who welcome in the presentation. But quickly also express concern that looking at your expenditure patterns, you have recorded underspending in almost all the programs, which is very much concerning, especially in the light of an outcry from the Department of Defense and military veterans in their combined manifestation of less allocation or budget allocation, to a point where you have asked that the committee must mediate with the National Treasury. But what would be the justification to mediate? What would be the justification for this committee to ask Treasury to allocate more when there is underspending in the way in which it's reported here? I just want you to answer what would be the basis of such a plea. Secondly, it would seem that your department, as an accounting officer, enjoys shifting funds, entertains violence, and you can only do this and do shifting of funds and doing violence as unforeseen circumstances. It would suggest that I might be wrong. There's no planning on the part of the senior management to avoid shifting of funds and considering
violent as it is the case now. It would seem, I might be wrong, that there's poor planning. Why would you have occurrences of shifting of funds and violence in a manner which seem to, from where I'm seated, seem to become a pattern, if not a trend? Thirdly, the Auditor General area, the Auditor General's office earlier has presented a report here on lack of compliance on the part of your department. And we can see here that there is an amount of 1.4 million which was initially meant for internal audit, shifted from internal audit to somewhere else. What would be your explanation for that? Why would you should take up that amount, even perhaps even more, from internal audit when internal audit ought to be the eyes and the ears of our people and Parliament about the activities and operations of the department, some of which the Office of the Auditor General has alleged that borders on non-compliance, borders on some serious financial offences and transgressions, and yet internal audit has been weakened in the manner in which it's been weakened. Would want to get an explanation for that. Fourthly, when it comes to social relief of distressed, would want to know when are you going to finish or conclude the process of migrating that program from the Department of Social Development to your department. Should that happen sooner, it will stop what we see here as continuous shifting of funds, which is grossly unjustifiable, and then doing things that you are doing here in the name of social relief of distresses. I don't know, you are complaining about senior positions which are vacant. What is it that you are submitting as a concrete proposal should be done? And perhaps even it's even wrong to ask you such question. The best you should be doing is to say, this is what I've done, and the accounting authority, which is the minister, is delaying the process so that an intervention can be facilitated. Would not want to be sitting with this situation in the sixth parliament, where from time to time we receive complaints about vacancies at most strategic level of the department. That must be addressed, and it must be addressed in a matter of urgency, so that we overcome teething weaknesses that are observable in the department. And we don't have to blame it on you, but we must blame it on the system. Perhaps you've been making outcries which have not been heard, which have not been listened to. Perhaps this is the time that your cries should be listened to. We are not sure in terms of your planning model. Before me, you have drawn up a logic model for planning. I don't know what is the impact of what you're doing. Social impact. We can see that there are outputs, there are inputs. We can see that there are outcomes which you say you intend to achieve, which are your deliverables. We don't see short, medium, and long-term outcomes, ways. We don't see social impact of what we are doing. It seems that you are comfortable with it, and you have made peace with that. that for as long as there are input and we're able to show them and illustrate them here, you are able to present your outputs, which is your deliverables, you're okay with that. You don't take the model to its logical conclusion, which is outcomes as well as social impact. We as public representatives were more interested about outcomes as well as the social impact of the thing that you said you're going to do, and the thing that we, especially the ruling party in its manifesto, campaigned on the basis of that manifesto and said these are the things that government are going to be doing. We're interested in social impact. Please, in the future, General Mohelli, take us through your confidence about the outcomes as well as the social impact of the work we're doing. I see none of that. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. I think I was helped this time. I always ask questions. This time, I was the chair. No questions from my son. Over to you, General.
Thanks,
Honorable JJ for assisting, and my apology. We had arranged previously for a meeting with the cluster chair, so we had a lunch meeting. Sorry for that delay, and you can proceed, General Mukwege, with the responses of those questions.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to be asking the some of the officials to assist. Ms. Morolo, the first question we'll be taking is, we speak to the faculties with the students are taking. In the main, yes, I know this covers quite a number, but in the main, which areas are they taking? CFO, you will be looking at the environment and utilization of the funds, where they've been moved and where they moved and what we're trying to cover in those areas. So if you can at least look at that. That is question one. In the question two, again, Ms. Morolo, the housing challenges and the database. But if you find very difficult, you can keep it, you can shift it back to me, I will take that, but you respond to those. The issue of moving the budget from housing, what challenges causes that? And where are we shifting that money? I will deal with the others. And of course, the issue of education, when it comes to the complaints which are coming from that, there are parents out there who are finding it difficult to understand, that they talk to us, but we're not responding. So Ms. Morolo will look at that. So for in terms of question for where it speaks to programs, again, there's a question of that 54 million and the increase and the budget item. Of course, they will understand what's the challenge with our office accommodation and what's happening there, if you can take that one. And Morolo, you can take the issue of the why are we moving the money from database and what challenges our agencies face there. Then the rest, I will deal with it. So let's start with all those questions, if you don't mind.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll start with the question that speaks to the issue of the allocation of housing. In fact, let me start with the education support one that speaks to the type of programs that we are funding. In a nutshell, we are funding everything that students approach us for in terms of studying, but the peak is in the social sciences. That's where we have quite a number of students that are doing social sciences. We do also have quite a number of students that are doing your medicine and your engineering, but the majority is in the social sciences. We can provide a written breakdown of the number of students that we funded and the different faculties that we are funding them from. But the first three would be your social sciences. We have quite a number of medicine students, and then your engineering. And then in terms of the issue of the allocation of housing, there's a question that speaks to when we shift money from housing, where do we shift it from, and what are the issues that are making us not to deliver the housing. And for example, it was raised that there are provinces that are not performing, and what happens to those provinces. In terms of shifting of funding, it's due to the fact that there was no alignment of the allocation of houses in provinces or the building of houses in provinces to the number of military veterans that are in those provinces. You'll find that provinces are ahead of us in terms of building, but they are building in areas where, in terms of our needs register, we don't have quite a number of military veterans that have registered a need in those provinces. And you find that in provinces where we have military veterans that are in need of housing, there are no projects in those provinces, because remember, we are piggybacking on the DHS programs in provinces and municipalities as well. So if there are no projects there, but we do have military veterans, we tend not to have a corresponding allocation of military veterans versus the number of houses that are being built in those provinces. However, to mitigate for that, we have started, as we were requested, to come and go and do a breakdown of our needs analysis in terms of where military veterans say they are in need of housing, the military veterans that have applied for housing assistance, and then we cross-match that with the provinces. And then the DHS begins to build in provinces where there are projects. We would have had an allocation that is based on the number of military veterans that are in need of housing, but then in the absence of that supply, then we have the money that is not being spent in that program. We have been using that money largely to subsidize education support, because there we had a huge challenge and a huge budget shortfall, because education support became a flagship of the department, where we saw a drastic increase in the number of demands for education support. So that is how we've been cross-subsidizing the education support benefit. And then in terms of shifting the money from database and what informed that, considering that the database is it's a key enabler in the department, the shifting was done due to the fact that we had anticipated that we'll have a system that was going to be procured and implemented to enable us to deliver efficiently and effectively, considering the fact that we are a paper environment and in the absence of human resource capacity. Then, as we had as one of our challenges, the dependency in terms of systems from CETA, where we have challenges in finding each other. Hence, we had there as mitigation the fact that we will need to find an alternative solution for us to be able to provide assistance. And I think I left. Okay, I've left the issue of the database. DG, if you could assist with the issue of the cleaning up of the database. And I think, okay, in terms of those provinces that were not delivering houses, I've spoken to that. And we are starting to have these steering committees in provinces where we need to fast track in communication and partnerships with DHS for us to be able to build houses in those provinces. I'm not sure. Okay, the issue of the outcry that was raised by the member here of slow response in terms of our queries resolution to military veterans, in particular education support, that is driven by a myriad of different reasons. It might be that we are slow. Yes, we do acknowledge that we tend to be slow in terms of addressing the challenges due to the reasons that we have just listed in the, of misalignment of the staff versus the benefits provisioning. However, we don't take that as an okay reason to give, but it's also an element of a misunderstanding of response to questions versus getting the answer that you were anticipating. If a person is being responded to but is not necessarily the answer that the person was looking for, sometimes it tends to be viewed as a lack of response. But we take cognizance to that, and we are trying to improve our method of responding to our members, and as well as the issue of trying to capacitate on this issue of the service delivery model. We hope that when that is being done, the personnel versus the capacity of the work and what is needed from us to deliver will be addressed. And also the issue of us trying to shift to provinces and strengthen our footprint, I think that will be addressed as well. In terms of the issue of the SRD moving to the DSD, we are in the process of finalizing that because we have entered into a memorandum of understanding with DSD, and they are prepared to assist us in a number of issues that are from the social perspective. And we are looking at ensuring that by the end of the financial year, we have moved the rest of the military veterans that have been receiving support from us. When we get new applicants for the benefit, we already refer them to DSD so that we don't close the process this side. So it should be clear for us by the end of the third quarter as to what is going to be remaining on that benefit that we can utilize to strengthen the support of the ailing veterans.
Thanks, Ms. Malone. Just to emphasize that this SRD, which we took upon, was not necessarily a benefit, but it was a gap which was identified by the minister for us to intervene. But now, in directing with the Department of Social Development, then it then became quite clear to us as a department that some of the programs which the Department of Social Development is having can accommodate this disability. So the memorandum of understanding we have signed, there are steering committees from both government departments, which then are engaging to take these and some of the programs which can be at least be available for military veterans. So it will be moving from DMV to Department of Social Development. And then the money for all these will be then be at least on the other end of social development. They are ready for that, they're for the programs. But for us, it will be just to monitor. That then will release also the amount of funds which we'll be using as a department on SRT, and then those funds will be used for something else. I just wanted also to assist Ms. Moron. On the issue of housing, not to deliberate the point, one of the weaknesses which we identified was that the provinces were expected to invoice us before we can pay. Now, part of the challenges with then were identified was that from the military veterans, before we can be invoiced, once one moves into a house, then one is supposed to stay in that house for something like a month or so, and then be able to say, I am happy. So we call that letter, which then the military veterans say, I'm happy with the house and everything else, we call it a happy letter for a lack of a better word. Now, that happy letter is a letter which then goes to a provincial Department of Human Settlement, which based on that letter, and also we've got a copy, mandates them then to invoice us, and then on the basis of that we can pay. Now that process was not necessarily clearly defined for everybody, but now we've entered those kind of engagement, it is quite clear for all of us, and also from our side we're able now to chase the invoices from the provincial government departments, because the reason why the funds were not flowing, that process was not necessarily clearly defined. So we have looked at that. I just wanted at least to allude to that aspect. Part of the complaints, of course, in terms of us responding as a department to those who are complaining, I think there's quite a number of those. We are trying to address that. But for education support, if either the child was still at school there might be, in terms of us paying to the school, that the, if it's a private school, then that school must be compliant in terms of tax. Then if the school is not compliant, then we don't pay. But then the challenge with the school, especially the private school, they do not necessarily respond in a, most of the time, or sometimes, let me say sometimes, in a positive way to us, because they understand themselves to be dealing with the parent. So now for us to pay, there must be proof that the school, the private school, is tax compliant. Now that creates a problem between us, school, and the parent, and the school then decides to take the child away, but then we find it difficult to pay. So this, and sometimes the banking details of the school, if the banking details of the schools are not quite clear, we then find it difficult to pay, because we might be paying somebody else, not actually the school. So these are some of the issues which we are facing. And of course, from our side too, there's been a weakness in terms of our website, so that it, and also our communication with the parent. So these are some of the problems which we have picked up, but we are trying to address in terms of any complaints, and more so in terms of the education support. CFO, before I engage on the other issues, you can take those ones of requirement and finances.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair, honorable members. The questions raised around violence and shifting of funds, are valid, but I'll just try and illustrate with the reason why those had to with regards to environment, yes, we did an environment of about 7 million, mostly from program 3 into program 1. The environment was necessitated by the lack of performance on program 2, meaning that then there were then declared savings by program 3 of about 7 million at that time, so that we can then fund cost pressure areas. The cost pressure area was for the 7 million to have been done in the environment, mainly under corporate services, where we pay for CETA services. We are presently contracted with CETA, where they then provide to the department critical support, mainly on IT systems, as well as the securitization of our servers. So basically there was a cost pressure in that area. However, we are also guided by the treasury prescripts to say we cannot shift more than 10% of our appropriated budget. So we also adhere to the treasury regulations and the appropriation bill. Then coming to the issue of shifting of funds. During the year, we monitor performance against the budget that is spent versus the budget. We've got targets by each month, by each quarter, and for the year, where we should also expect to spend 100% of the allocated funds. So during each month, we submit what we call an in-year monitoring report to Treasury, as well as internally, we have also constituted a committee meeting that monitors spend against budget. So it is during those meetings and as well as submission of in-year monitoring to Treasury where decisions, where we don't see movement in funds, then we follow the applicable prescripts then to then shift the funds where we know there won't be performance, rather than reprioritize our activities and identify cost pressure areas. I will make a good example, as Ms. Merodo has indicated. On housing, yes, there were delivery of about 417 houses versus a target, which was an underperformance, unfortunately. However, invoices were not forthcoming from the provinces, because we've got service level agreements, not with the national department, but with the provincial Department of Human Settlement. Majority of the houses were delivered by the Gauteng province. However, invoices have since been delayed and we are carrying accruals at the moment. As Auditor General indicated in the earlier slot, for the DMV, we're carrying roughly about 28 million in the form of accruals, mainly related to the Gauteng province. We've been engaging with the province, whom has always been indicating that they will still be sending those invoices through. So we are having systems in place now to close these matters. So due to lack of invoice submission, then there was a cost pressure mainly on healthcare provisioning, where then, as indicated in our financial statement, DOD submits their invoice sometimes late, which then creates a cost pressure in the form of what we really need to pay, as well as in the form of accruals. So majority of the funds that were then allocated or earmarked for housing were then shifted towards the cost to mitigate the cost pressure on housing. The same question around the funds shifted from internal audit. Yes, we did shift a total of 1.4. 1.1 million was earmarked for capital expenditure under internal audit. However, we knew that we realized that we're not going to spend 1.1 million on capital expenditure. And then about 289 was moved from goods and services. Then those funds were then shifted towards the total administration within the administration branch, so that we alleviate cost pressure areas. The same applies, just to add on this, Morolo. We had earmarked to spend about 2.5 million on database. As well as due to the chief director post being vacant for the majority of the year, as well as the director database, meaning that operating expenditure were not moving as what had been planned. Then we realized that those funds would not be utilized by the end of the financial year. So those funds then were shifted to cost pressure areas. The issue of the office rentals, yes. We know that not all provincial offices are operational. So the budgeting part had assumed that all provinces would have had their provincial offices fully operational. But we know that by the end of last year, it was only HQ and three of provincial offices that had been procured. So the rest of the funds were not going to be utilized. So those funds were then shifted to cost pressure area. I can also then, if need be, we general, if they need further details on what was shifted, I provide it in a written report. But basically, that's on the top line, how we have performed in terms of environment, as well as in terms of ensuring that all the shifting of funds is within the prescribed spending check. So you think.
Thanks, Ms. Honorable Chair, members, the question was speaking to the businesses and the number of the businesses which are involved. If we take the annual report and then it was page, I think page 28, let me just check if I'm right. Can you just check that for me in the meantime? Whilst, with your permission, Chair, we're checking the actual page in terms of business which we have as a department and which we've assisted. That one is a very, it goes, Chair, through a question of how do you set a target and is the target measurable? And also, that's the challenge in terms of the performance indicator which we have. It reads as, this is page 39, number of mental veterans businesses provided with access to employment opportunities. With access to employment opportunities. Now, in the 17 18 financial year, there are 154 of those. Now, we are saying in the 18-19, there are 308 of those. That means we planned for 110, so we have achieved 308. Now, this is a very difficult issue in terms of trying to say what actually happened there. Because if you go to our walk-in register and you come in today and then they assist you with whatever you are looking for, whether it's registering in our own database, whether it's registering in the central national database, you might be counted as two. Now the question is, have you been assisted with business? No, you have just been assisted to begin to start functioning in terms of being part of the database and central national database. So we are looking at that indicator, but presently this is how we record it and we are looking at it. Chair, I just wanted to explain along those lines that it is not one of the best in terms of trying to measure what is it that we are doing in terms of the businesses. Because we want to know which business, which has been registered, is it operational, and how is it doing, and in what field of business is it operating in. Question two, it was not question two, was more of a comment. I think we take note of the issues of leadership, and of course we are mindful in terms of the systems and controls. This is what we need to work on more and make sure that at least we can prevent some of the weaknesses which lead to what's happening. We take note of that. The skills development we're talking about there, it's not necessarily on the DMV members, that those are the skills training for military veterans. So that's what we're talking at there, which then we fail at least to empower them, because you want them to be self-sufficient. That's why they must be trained, so that they don't only depend on this SRT, but they can do things on their own in terms of improving their lives. So this is what we're talking about. Now the question three, consequent management and the delay. Chair, what happened there? I think I probably might have alluded to this. I don't know. So the irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which has been happening for quite a number of years, which was identified in 17-18 financial year. When then management was trying to deal with that, then there was a breakdown within management in terms of moving forward with dealing with those irregular and fruitless wasteful expenditure. There is a financial misconduct panel which is supposed to be established by the department, and people get appointed. When then this situation arose at the time, then the members resigned who were supposed to be dealing with this. Then there was a lot of disagreement within management about how to handle this. And then it gets stuck, and then the DG could not move. So then what we have done now, having moved in, we have discussed it, we have looked at the individuals who must be appointed and look at their portfolios in terms of where they are sitting up in the organization and what their role is, not in terms of who they are. And then begin to explain that if you are sitting in this position, you are required to do A, B, C, D. So yes, letters have been signed. Now they've accepted those responsibilities. But again, what we have done then to try and manage whatever challenges were there within management, we have used Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, where they've given us a capability and capacity to manage only irregular part of it, of this, and working with National Treasury to make some determination of what actually happened, so as to be able then to take consequence management. All that is happening under the chairmanship of the CFO, and of course some of the members around the table are part of that. So this one is going to lead us to actually determining what actually happened per irregular instance, and then deal with it accordingly as National Treasury regulation and instructions guide us. So we are at least on track. CFO has convinced me, tell me if I'm wrong, you said that by November we should be at least somewhere. Yeah. So by November, but we took, let's say we are at least be able to make a report and progress report in regards to that one. For the ones of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, now our own individuals who have been appointed in that financial misconduct panel are the ones who are going to deal with that. But then they are being assisted again and taken on board by this external team, so that at least they also begin to understand what needs to be done, and also to build confidence among themselves, so that we can be able to deal with issues of consequence management. I will at least say that's where we are now, but I think yes, in the past, it created at least some problems, and no consequences were undertaken in terms of management, and that created some delays because of those differences. The two individuals which were suspended, they are still on suspension. What we have done, we have appointed the chairperson of the disciplinary committee and coming from another province, and we've appointed also the person who's going to lead evidence, and the individual have been charged, and now it's a question of when they are going to appear now before the disciplinary committee. So this is what now we're waiting for. But everything else is already, as we said, in place. In terms of the implication of what are the financial implications, those individuals, they have been suspended with full pay. But then, of course, they are not at work. The other part of the implication is that in their absence, now what's happening in terms of making sure that their functions are performed? We have gone to the Department of Defense, where we've asked for assistance and support. They provided us with people who, in the meantime, doing the job, but of course we are not necessarily paying for them because they are coming from the security department, so that's the arrangement in terms of managing that one. The issue of the provincial offices, we are working with the Department of Public Works, and of course the speed of us getting any offices is informed by the speed of the Department of Public Works, and at this stage we are still on three, but they were working on the Free State one and the Western Cape one to at least take us somewhere, but that's where we are in terms of the challenges with that means will put us to five, but we also are engaging the DG of Department of Public Works to try and at least assist us to push his own staff so that they can go out to the regions and do what needs to be done. But on our own, we are hamstrung that we cannot do it on our own. We must then rely on the Department of Public Works, which they are not among the fastest at this stage on this particular issue. Then in terms of question five, underspend in all programs and allocation of more funds by the National Treasury in with regard to justification, what was discussed with the National Treasury? Using the issue of the service delivery model, the National Treasury said to us when we were talking about funding, they said they would find it difficult to fund us as a Department of Military Veterans because our structure does not, first, the service delivery model is not clear to them, so we need to develop that. And also, once we've got a structure which is approved by the DPSA, then they are ready to fund us, they don't have a problem. They don't have a challenge to fund us. But then we must also be quite clear, what are we doing? Are we actually delivering the service, or are we facilitating and coordinating with the other government departments? So in the process of that service delivery model and the approval of the structure, we've got somebody from National Treasury who's working with us, with UPSA, so that by the time then the structure is finalized, then they are saying to us they are ready to look at how to support and assist us. So they are part of the team together. But at this stage, it would be difficult until and unless the structure is in place and the model is accepted and the provinces are in place and we know what we want to do. It would be difficult to ask the committee to go to National Treasury to ask for funds because, of course, it's also got to work on our systems and processes and our policies as a department. Once those at least we're quite clear and we know that we can deliver, we can then ask for assistance if we're not getting the resources required from National Treasury. But as far as I'm concerned, speaking with the CFO, going to that side, we always find them seemingly ready to support and assist, but asking us those kind of difficult questions in terms of moving forward. The issue of vacant posts of the DG, the post was advertised, I think that was probably last year, and then people did apply, and then that list was submitted to the minister, and of course, whilst we're working on that, and then also the post of the DDG, social economic support, the post was advertised, it went to shortlisting, and it went to interviews. But then, with the advent of the sixth administration and some of the government departments being at least amalgamated, and of course some of the function moving, then from public service administration, then there was a direction which says to the ministers, the posts of the DGs and the post of the DDGs should be at least held in abeyance until such time it is quite clear among those whose DGs who might lose their post because of this amalgamation process. So it is not yet done. We were hoping that by end of September there will be an answer, but up to this stage we have not necessarily got a full answer to say who is available and then how those people are going to be managed. Because the idea was to prevent a situation where you advertise and then you hire somebody, want to find that there are other people who are going to end up without jobs because of the process of amalgamating or reconfiguring the government departments. With the chief directors and any other posts below that, we are at least working very hard to fill those, and I would venture to say at least we are doing very well in that regard. The last part, Chair, in terms of the question which was speaking to social impact, and we seem to be silent on that. I wanted to use this strategy map, which if we start from the bottom, looking at the column going up, talking to the investment in terms of the future, the inputs, activities, outputs and deliveries and outcome and the impact. We might not necessarily, in terms of the presentation as we have done when we're presenting, probably articulated that we've got that which guides us. Because at the end of the day, if you look at the community of military veterans as an outcome for us, social impact for us, they should be able to say they are at least housed. They are also able to do their own, they are self-sufficient in terms of empowerment. They are running their businesses. So this is why we talk a dignified, unified, empowered, and self-sufficient. That's the social impact we're looking at in terms of the programs we have. So this is how we're trying to explain ourselves. We might not have articulated during the actual PowerPoint presentation that's what informs us as we move forward. With your permission, Chair, I might have left something else, but I think I've done justice to what was required of us with the team. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, General. I think if there's any follow-up, last set of questions, and we'll wrap up. Honorable Shilembe, Honorable J.J. Maki.
Chairperson, thank you for another opportunity that is given. I was expecting some advice on how to persuade if a person is not being held. I'm referring this to a situation where a child has not been helped. I understand the background that there are problems within the department, but I would have appreciated if you say, if this has come to the association, you can refer that person to so-and-so. I'm talking about someone now, I mean, who has tried a number of times to get hold of officials in the department but not getting assistance. I'm talking about someone who has already tried the presidential hotline but has not been assisted. Now, we as public reps, you know, to go back and say, they said, well, there are problems being attended. It's better to say that person must come to the, it's about education, it's about health, it's about house, where to go that person. Then if that person is not assisted, what must that person do? As I'm saying, it's better if, I mean, you give a sort of reference rather than say there is a problem. So, by nature, there are people, officials, who are lazy by nature. And you'll find the department not performing because of people who are lazy by nature, and you'll be coming here to account. But if, say, you are able to get it from the host mount that I have a problem, and also to share information with these military veterans that when they go or retire, whatever happens, you say, these are the places you must go if you need help. These are the numbers you must use if you need help. If you don't get assistance, then you can refer your complaint to. So this is what I was trying to do a follow-up check. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's not a question. It's not referred to the department. Daniela made a terrible mistake. Somebody wanted to talk at the back there, and I never dealt with that situation before I brought the mic to you. I think what you can do, you can have a one-on-one if you want to talk to the department before they leave. If you want to talk to the portfolio committee, you can see the chairperson, or you, yeah, and organize how you will do it, whether you want to write your letter to them or yeah. I just wanted to address that. Thank you, chairperson.
No. Yeah, it's fine. I think that the follow-up is that one only. Maybe also to add on that for clarity, because the AG was here and the CFO, I think, was here when the AG was presenting. And some of the questions that were directed to the AG, which will be relevant to the department in terms of the action that you are taking, I am satisfied that you indicated that by end of November and we'll check how far are you in terms of ensuring that the actions are taken with in line with the prescripts PMFMA to deal with those irregulars. As we appreciate that you have moved from 3 million to a smaller than a figure, but an ideal situation will be a zero. And what steps are you taking? And we'll wait until November. We'll remind you so that you give us feedback as to what is it that you have done to ensure that this does not happen again. But when you go to your huge book on your AF, your financial statement, I think it's, let me just verify the page. I think it's page 125, né? If you can assist by clarifying what is that departmental revenue, except for the annual appropriation that you get, what other revenue do you have and how do you get that revenue and those interests on land, I think it's 1,000, it's in thousands. What is it all about that you gain, you have interest to pay, and that revenue? I think that will be all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the question. Starting with revenue, as a department chair, you are correct. We are not a revenue department. However, there are instances where we may be receiving money in a form of revenue. A good example is when you receive a credit note from a service provider for an expenditure that would have happened in the previous financial year, so you've got nothing to offset it against. So you need to then declare it as revenue. There are instances where, for instance, when you're advertising bids, as a handling fee, we may charge a nominal fee for handling bids. So those are type of revenues that a department can generate. But there is a particular instance where you see that revenue of 53,000. That one is particularly related to instances where we manage garnishing orders on behalf of the justice system, whereby some of our officials have got judgments, e.g. on maintenance. So as a department, because it costs us money to handle this, we normally charge a management fee of about 5% for the value of that garnishing. So all of that then gets recorded as a revenue, but we don't utilize it as a department. We surrender to National Treasury on the National Revenue Fund. That particular instance of 1,000 rand paid as interest on land, it's when we fail to pay a service provider on time, then they ended up charging us interest, and you have to record it as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So that's how it normally gets recorded. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to indicate that we've got our website and we've got also a call center, but I'll be able to share the numbers and all the other things for the assistance of those individuals who might be looking for us, so that if one has got a challenge, then of course our call center, then they will respond, but the numbers are available for the website. It's an operational. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we have exhausted the agenda items. Thank you, General Mukwebi, for and your team for the presentation, and honorable members. This brings us to the end of this meeting. I therefore declare this meeting officially closed. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.